This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, Place to Be Nation, we're back for the Survivor Series reaction show, and what a show this was in many, many, many ways. I'm your host, Chris Zellner, joined as always by my co-host, the Oracle of the WWE, Devin Hales. And Devin, we've seen some pay-per-views this year and all over the years, and this one's going to go down as one of the more memorable ones in recent times. Wow, that's all I can say, huh?
Yeah, definitely. This was kind of a, in some ways, I think it was kind of a tale of two shows. We'll get to it, and I'll kind of wrap around at the end, but the first half was kind of a mixed bag, and it was, from the looks of it on social media, a lot of people thought it was bad. And then the second half happened, and it was pretty darn good, and at the least had a lot of interesting things happen. So, this was a this show had, I think, everything, for sure.
Oh, yeah. And we're about to get into it as, this is a theme where the past couple of years at least, they've made Survivor Series into basically the only show that Raw and SmackDown wrestle each other. They basically taking the place of Battleground.
Right.
In so many ways. And we had that again this year. And this year's been different because they put all that effort into building up Crown Jewel. That Survivor Series, just happens to happen right after that. And there's no build. And then they decide to change the main matches. One of them by, they had to do. And then the other one by, out of nowhere, which the two main events of the show. And it's just weird that we had a Survivor Series with just basically no build. At all, other than the angle they shot on Raw with all the women. The women had the most build out of anybody.
They did, yep.
Because every other match was cold.
Yep.
Except for the cruiserweights, which we're talking about. But every other match was cold on this show. So let's get this show on the road. Pre-show was a two-hour pre-show. That's basically a whole bunch of nothing. They did do an angle where they had Natalya and Ruby Riott get into a fight, and Captain Alexa kicking them off the Raw team, which eventually, shockingly, the two spots went to Bayley and Sasha Banks, which of course they wrestled on Raw Monday, and they got attacked, so Alexa wouldn't have to choose either one of them to be on the show, be on the team. And then, of course, what happens? They're on the team anyway. So what are your thoughts on this situation? You think they did the right thing by putting Bayley and Sasha instead of Natalya and Ruby? Or
it was really bizarre that they did. I mean, I don't really know why they did that. I don't really understand why they did that. Like, here's the thing. I understand, like, the idea of, like, Alexa getting mad and kicking Ruby and Natalya off, because they can't get along and then their own separate personal feud or whatever. Like, I'm fine with that. But, like, I don't know. Like, they did it all. Like, it doesn't make sense after they did the angle where, on Raw, where Sasha and Bayley had this hard-fought match and then got beat up. And then Ruby was announced as the fifth member. It was weird. Like, they just went into this, like, almost like a full circle of just doing weird just angles and twists and turns just for the heck of it. I don't know. Just because they could.
Would this have been better as a way to introduce two new people?
Yeah, I think there's always,
Because they, last year, let's not forget, was it last year Survivor Series that the Riot Squad made their debut?
It was the Monday after Survivor Series.
Because
they had the Riot Squad come in on SmackDown, and then they had Absolution come in on Raw on the same week. So it was Survivor Series week. So you're right about that, but it was after the pay-per-view.
So yeah, they set a precedent in bringing in new people.
Right.
So they could have brought new people on the show.
And I'm sure you'll bring it up here soon, we've already got our first Lars vignette, So I mean, you know, they're already, you know.
Oh, there's a few people need to be coming up.
Oh yeah, for sure, absolutely.
So yeah, I mean, this could have been something to bring up, you know, a couple of the women from NXT, because God knows they got a deep roster down there right now. So it could have been one to introduce two new women to the show, which is needed to get some depth.
Right.
So, which will probably happen anyway. So. Who knows? But anyway, it got Bayley and Sasha on it, which is funny because Sasha was on Twitter, you know, having some interesting tweets about not being on the show.
Typical Sasha behavior.
And then she's on the show. So, yeah. Hey, worked out for her.
Yep.
All right. You mentioned Lars Sullivan. There was a Lars Sullivan vignette during the pre-show and during the main show. So, he's coming up. I gotta think he's going to SmackDown. Would you agree? Because I don't. I mean, Raw is just too many other big guys. He stands up more on SmackDown.
He's probably got to go on SmackDown. I mean, you know, I mean, like, yeah. I think there's the Raw Haas division is pretty loaded. I think the only Haas is. I mean, you know, you've got Big E and Killian Dane, but they're in tag teams, and then you've got Samoa Joe, but. You know, Lars, I think he would thrive better on SmackDown in the current environment for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And working against guys like Jeff Hardy and possibly Rey Mysterio.
Yes,
you
yes.
know, so veteran baby face.
Absolutely.
Would definitely help him out too. So we'll see where he ends up going. And then again, like you said, there's probably going to be others from NXT coming up too, which is they need to.
Yep.
They need to get some of that clutter out of there. All right. Next, we have the pre-show match, which has become quite a point of contention after the pre-show and the main show, because it wasn't even basically acknowledged as a part of the results. On and when Michael Cole basically explained it, well, this is the pre-show. So we had the tag team Survivor Series match, where SmackDown you had the New Day, you had the Colognes, you had the Good Brothers, you had Sanity, and you had the Usos up against Raw's teams, the Revival, Bobby Roode, and Chad Gable. Try to think who else here real quick. Lucha House Party was a part of that. Who am I missing?
The Ascension.
The Ascension was in there. That's right. Very shortly, yes.
Oh, gosh. Is there somebody?
And B-Team.
Yeah, there you go.
B-Team, yes. So, 10-team match. This was a sloppy-ass fucking match, but you know what? It was entertaining as hell. The guys that looked the best in this was the Revival. New Day looked good, of course, you know, doing their stuff. But the Revival and the Usos, I mean, that whole end run there made me want to see a big series between these two teams. And also reminded me, man, the Usos are just doing nothing on SmackDown. They need to be on Raw so bad to be part of that, you know, to be the anchor of the Raw tag division. And it was funny, I made the joke on Twitter before, you know, before the match started, when they had New Day introduce all the teams on SmackDown, just to remind people that, yes, these teams still are on the roster because they're never on television.
I told my brother Dustin, you know, we're watching together, and I said, literally, for someone who watches every WWE TV match, I'm pretty sure the Colognes have been on SmackDown twice this year. Literally twice. That's not a joke. That's not an exaggeration. And that's it. They haven't even had vignettes, nothing. Like they've wrestled twice on the show. That's it.
Because what hurts all the talent on SmackDown and can't get on the main show is there is no B show for them to work, because 205 Live is taped before SmackDown.
Correct. Yep.
Like Raw, you have Main Event, so all the people that can't get on Raw, they're on Main Event, so they're actually wrestling on a television show that people can watch.
Yep.
And that's why the Raw, you know, all the Raw teams, they all are known because they're either on Raw some, you know, not every week, but maybe every other week, and people are seeing their stuff. Gallows and Anderson can't get on SmackDown. Sanity's just been lost, you know, pretty much. Yep. Hell, the Usos, you know, up until recently was not even known on television regularly. So, yeah, exactly. That's a problem. That's definitely a problem for those guys. But anyway, fun match. I love seeing Grand Metalik eliminate Luke Gallows. I thought it was great. but yeah, Chad Gable and Bobby Roode. I'll talk about them real quick. When they were put together as a team, I thought, well, this is just odd. You know, just two guys that you wouldn't expect to team up together. But I think they've come to embrace it. They got some really strong double team combo moves. And it looks like they may have some with these guys. So what's your thoughts on all the guys in the match and how everything went?
Yeah, I thought the first match or the first half of the match was kind of bad. Like, not as it was just kind of like just like no one, you know what I mean? Like all those like forgettable teams because they don't book their tag divisions well at all. Or, you know, or at least not on a consistent basis like ever, really in the history of the company. So I thought the first half was kind of like, you know, just kind of there, bland, kind of bad. Although it was interesting, they did like a little mini angle with like Kalisto getting hurt and then Metalik having to take a spot. And you know, Corey Graves was of course being Corey Graves and complaining about it. I thought once the match got going down to the final four teams, New Day and Usos versus Revival and Gable and Roode, I thought it was really, really fun. Definitely sloppy, especially on Scott Dawson's part. I love Scott Dawson, but he looked terribly sloppy tonight. Like, he did the tope and, like, his toe caught, you know, like kind of caught the bottom rope and, like, he tried the tornado DDT and almost fell. Like, it wasn't even bad. Like, it was just like he was going all out and doing all this crazy stuff, and like it wasn't always hitting. But yeah, it was definitely a fun match in the second half. My biggest question is how the hell did Sanity get eliminated? Because the pizza guy showed up right, and I turned around and they were gone.
I'm trying to remember.
Because
they were eliminated after the B team.
Right, yeah.
I think Killian Dane was pinned.
But was it like the Ascensions, like Fall of Man or something? That's kind of what I've been gathering, but I'm not sure. I don't know.
I wasn't paying attention. There were some quick eliminations there, and I really wasn't paying attention because I'm still watching some of the football going right on. And I happened to look, and I was like, oh, there's Sanity's gone.
Yeah, so, that's the great mystery of Survivor Series 2018. How the hell did Sanity get eliminated?
Well, that shows you, though, about how you know, they felt about, you know, these teams.
For sure, too, you know? For sure. Yeah, but I thought once it got to the down to the final four teams, it was really good. And the dodge sequence was great. The German suplex was like absurd. Totally insane. I've really come to enjoy Roode and Gable as a team as well. You know, even with Scott Dawson's sloppiness, which I think was actually pretty entertaining. That final showdown with the Usos was great. They did the old school fans are going to kill me for not knowing the name of the superplex splash spot. What's it called?
Power and Glory spot.
Yeah, the powerplex, I guess is what it was, right? That was great. They've done that before, but that match was and they did the Steiner's bulldog spot too.
A power bomb position.
Yep. Yeah, that match was got real good in the last 10 minutes, and I definitely enjoyed it. Usos did the Roman tribute again on the finish, which was pretty cool. Mm-hmm. Like I said, the first half was definitely a mess because, you know, like we talked about before, these teams aren't being used, and even the ones on Raw that are being used are on main event most weeks. So, you know, people just didn't care in the crowd, but once they got down to the final four teams, it got pretty exciting. So I think it was safely a good match by the end of it.
Oh yeah. Yeah, it was entertaining for sure. All right. excuse me. the main show opens with the Women's Survivor Series match, where Team SmackDown feature Carmella, Mandy Rose, who took the fifth spot on the pre-show, magically. Sonya Deville, Asuka, Naomi, I guess Raw's Bayley, Sasha Banks, Nia Jax, Mickie James, and Tamina. And boy, Nia Jax had the molten heat here. Woof! They did not like her at all for injuring their Becky Lynch. And, I mean, it's going to work out for them in the end, for everybody. You know, Becky became a monster babyface off of that issue, you know, with Nia punching her in the face. Nia's heat is going to be pretty amazing now, so she's going to capitalize on it. But, you know, it's tough. It's a tough situation when you have somebody really injure somebody like that, and everybody ends up getting rewarded for it in a way. It's weird. It's a weird deal. We'll talk about that as we go along. But the match, I tell you, I mean, the women had their own way, and we had it here in this match. A lot going on, not always the cleanest and the crisp. But boy, they were putting it out there, and they were really taking it to each other. And I thought they did a good job for everything they were doing. Yeah, Naomi getting eliminated quick was interesting. By Tamina, no less. Of course, Carmella got Tamina. Mandy got Mickie James with help from Sonya Deville. Of course, she stole Sonya Deville's win, so you had that. Bayley pinning her best friend Carmella. Then Sasha went over Mandy. Then we had the double countout spot where Bayley and Sonya got eliminated, leaving Nia, Sasha, and Asuka. And Asuka had, you know, had a chance to shine in this match. She needed it. It's been a while. So Sasha had Asuka ready to go. Then Nia threw threw Sasha off the ropes and got Asuka knocked her out. Then Nia dropped the big leg numerous times on Asuka and got the pin on her, and as the fans just went molten. So I think considering what's going on, it's definitely the right finish. And yeah, that's the women's match. So what's your thoughts on the match and the whole Nia Jax situation in general?
Match was pretty good. I like this match. I thought everybody had I thought they did a good job of letting everybody shine. I think the one person who really didn't get to shine was Naomi, of all people. She was, you know.
Yeah, because she was gone
exactly.
In seconds.
She was gone in seconds. Much. I mean, because, you know, at least Tamina got the pin. But, you know, Carmella got the shine. She got the dance-off segment. Sonya and Mandy got tons of shine, which I was happy to see. And, you know, Sasha and Bayley were the workhorses and got nice shine. Sasha and Asuka had a great showdown for about 5 minutes. They have great chemistry. They had that awesome match earlier this year on Raw, back in January. They still have good chemistry, and I liked their little one-on-one competition before Nia came back in to finish things up. But, anytime Nia was in the ring against anybody, the heat was off the charts and people were chanting Mandy's name, in a face-off with Nia. Like, and Mandy Rose is, you know, popular with a lot of Florida fans, but, you know, she's not necessarily someone who's going to get, you know, cheered every week. And that just shows you how much heat Nia has when people are chanting Mandy Rose's name.
Well, she's a heel too.
Yep. Absolutely. So, you know, it was a lot of fun when Nia was in there. Just to bait, you know, just to work off the heat. Mickey, I thought was a really good veteran. She got to have, you know, have some nice exchanges and sequences with some of the other ladies. I really liked how well they protected Sonya Deville. They really protected her. You know, she basically got a pin. I mean, Mandy stole the pin from her, but, you know, she basically got an elimination, and she was counted out in the match. And that's definitely a way of protecting someone. So I'm interested and hopeful to see what they do with her, because I think that she's, you know, one of the most improved women on the roster in terms of in-ring. And she's gotten to be pretty darn good in the ring, and I'm hopeful that they do some interesting things with her in the future. And I think that that's a good sign that she was protected tonight. I'm glad that that seems to be the case, that they might do something with her. Like you said, Asuka got the shine, which is you know, she desperately needed that. She's still super over. I mean, on SmackDown during the segment with Becky, you know, fans were going nuts to pick up, you know to pick her to face Ronda. So she's still maintained her overness. You know, part of that is Asuka's somebody like a Daniel Bryan, who, you know, you give her shit, she's going to excel at it. I mean, she's been working comedy matches in a tag team with Naomi, and people are enjoying the hell out of it, because she's excellent and she's got great range and she knows how to do all sorts of character work, and that's, you know, great wrestlers are able to keep their momentum and to stay over with the fans. And I think, you know, it's a good sign that she's still really over. But yeah, I thought it was a smart finish. I thought it was a smart, honestly, a smart booking decision to capitalize on the heat with Nia, even though I do think it's a little odd, you know, because a lot of times people are like, oh, she should be punished for this or that or whatever. And it was clearly a fucked up punch to the nose. I mean, no question about it. I mean, it was a total clean hit to Becky's clock. I mean, it was a totally brutal punch. And pretty much uncalled for, I would say, from my point of view. Or at least it seemed that way. But, you know, I do think that it's kind of smart to keep the momentum going with Nia in this heat. And the heat she got tonight was excellent. And I think it's a good idea to keep that momentum going. And I think it was the right and the smartest finish tonight was to have Nia steal that win. You know, and it also... You know, and I thought it was a good idea to have her, you know, push Sasha off the top, because Sasha and Bayley were attacked on Raw, and you know, they basically threatened Alexa and the other ladies, you know, on the pre-show, and were like, you know, after tonight, we're going to kick your ass. So, you know, I like to think that Alexa, you know, probably told Nia to, you know, finish Sasha off too. So there's that as well. I thought it was well booked, and, you know, keeping up with all these ladies, Nia, Becky, and Charlotte, and Ronda all got spotlighted tonight. I mean, Becky was highly praised tonight all throughout the pre-show. You know, even though she wasn't there tonight, she was put over massively. And she's been killing it on social media, you know, saying, you know, talking all tons of great trash. And, you know, what Nia did seemingly was, you know, came off as unprofessional. I mean, I don't know how much of an accident it was or wasn't, but at the same time, smart move to keep this heat going and this momentum going, especially in the title match with Ronda coming up.
We'll talk about it more later on, but they've kind of got themselves in a predicament with all this too. Like I said, we'll talk about it later, because you have all this stuff going on. The problem is the heat's on separate shows.
Yep, that's a great point.
And I guess we'll get to it later on, but anyway, Raw now leads 1-0, because that pre-show match don't count. Amazing. So anyway, Stephanie told Baron Corbin backstage that if you want to be the full-time GM of Raw, they need to sweep the night, Which people on Twitter was like, wait a minute, they've already lost one match. Well, again, remember, that doesn't count. So we have that whole situation going on. Paige and Shane shows up, you know, and they had the little deal. So it is what it is. All right, next match. Champion versus champion match, the first one of the night. Shinsuke Nakamura, U.S. champion against Intercontinental champion Seth Rollins. First time ever meeting, which is a theme of this show in some of these matches. And interesting match. Nakamura looked really weird wearing his shirt and whatever it was up under his shirt. So he had, I don't know what you would call it. It's not a jacket or anything, but it was some type of top. And
it's like,
again, I hate the shirt.
It's like his Blue Man Group outfit or something.
Yeah, I hate the shirts. stupid. And so we had that, but this match was tedious, long, but it was a good match. And probably the best match Nakamura's been in recent matches lately. I know that for sure, which I think is also part of a testament to Seth Rollins and how great Seth Rollins is right now. Really strong match for what it was. Could have been better, yes. It'd been better if it was shorter. I would say that, but I think it delivered pretty much for what they were going for here. Rollins wins. Raw's now up 2-0. So this is a pretty easy match to pick, I think, because you know they got the Rollins and Ambrose deal. The only way I think Nakamura could have won is if Ambrose showed up and cost Rollins the match, but Ambrose doesn't even show up on the whole show. So what were your thoughts on this match?
This was a good match. I think they delivered. I was expecting this to go 20 or 25 minutes going in, so I was expecting that. It definitely was a little boring in the first 10 or 15 minutes at times, for sure. You know, there was definitely some boredom there for me. You know, Nakamura wrestles like where he's always like trying for suplexes and like doing like, you know, like the front face lock and stuff like that. Like where he's like trying to like build to moves and stuff and like a very, you know, Japanese puro style in a lot of ways, you know, I could be wrong, but I've noticed that. I remember him doing that in the Samoa Joe matches in NXT. I just don't think that stuff gets that over with American crowds. And I noticed that he's done that quite frequently. You know, like when he's trying to, you know, fighting for a suplex and stuff like that, like in a really slow, methodical way. That's a very puro, you know, type style. And that's just kind of like a I guess a criticism I have of how Nakamura works. But, you know, I thought they picked it up towards the second half of the match and had some good near falls and some nice drama. And I thought the finish was really well done. So yeah, it was definitely a good match. Just a bit on the long side for sure. Like you said.
Yeah. That's, you know what, that's been, I tweeted it out. I mean, that this is the template for a lot of WWE big matches lately, though. And definitely NXT. But, and NXT
Chris, big did shows, I lose but, you?
I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I had myself on mute because I had a little coughing spell. yeah, so I'm here. But anyway, like I was saying on mute, this seems like the template, like I tweeted out, of WWE big matches lately on these shows is we're going to have these long sections and this is going to be okay. Then we'll have this hot finish.
Right.
You know, and NXT's done it a lot on takeovers and it seems like WWE's doing a whole lot more. There's not a lot of back and forth going on during the middle where people can kind of get lost. You got to remember, this is a, we're in a different culture now than we've ever been in before. I mean, this is an ADD culture.
Yes.
You know, people lose interest really quickly in things. So I think that's the reason why long wrestling matches aren't nearly as popular as they once was. You know, and it's just a different time and different way of watching wrestling. And yeah, you can appreciate they're doing stuff, but sometimes you're doing stuff just for sake of doing stuff too. And I'm not saying this match in particular. I'm just saying in general.
Sure.
That there's a lot of that going on. There was a lot of that going on in NXT the night before. But
47-minute War Games match. God.
But yeah, I mean, these two guys, I think they have another. I mean, again, they've never worked each other before. They've been on separate shows. I don't think they've had any interaction, period. So, I mean, this was a definite, you know, different style of match. And I think if you've given a chance to have a rematch, they probably have an even better one. So, I don't know. We'll see maybe down the line that they hook up again. But it was a novel match, and it was really good. So, props to them. And Ron's great. He is so awesome right now. So, and that place was red hot for him when he came out, too. No doubt. He had a lot of heat. All right, after this match, we have the Raw men's team backstage, where they were all talking their shit. And Braun was running down everybody. Best part, talking to Leo Rush, I don't even know you. And so how much you hate everybody, and you got the Finn Balor says, I kind of like you. Going back to the whole, we're finally going back to the Braun and Finn little buddy stuff again. And you know what? It's good that they basically have pretended that the Braun heel turn never happened.
Right.
Because it was stupid to begin with.
Yes.
So, you know, that's the, of anything that came out of Roman Reigns', you know, health issues, turning Braun back babyface was a definite plus. So, anyway, they had to deal with Corbin and all this other stuff. So it was what it was. All right. Next match is the champions versus champions in the tag team side here. SmackDown's champions, The Bar, with The Big Show, versus the Authors of Pain with Drake Maverick. The match was fine. I mean, it was a good match. Again, another match between guys who had never had any interaction with each other before. I think there's definitely a chance that if these guys wrestle again, and given a different circumstance, they probably have a hell of a damn match. I mean, Cesaro and Sheamus are amazing as a tag team and as workers in general. And AOP is starting to get better. They're starting to do more things, and they're starting to adapt, you know, to what's going on. But this match had no chance for many reasons. Let's talk about it here. As the match was about to begin, during the section where they're talking to all the foreign announced teams, you hear this big ovation in the background. Well, on Twitter, early in the show, people had noticed on the broadcast that there was a guy sitting in the second row ringside facing the hard camera, wearing a white hoodie and some type of hairpiece, and he looked exactly like Enzo Amore. Of course, Enzo's been in the news lately for being kicked off airplane, for vaping, and all this other junk. So, as the Mandarin team is giving their little speech, this is when all this is going on. The crowd's going crazy. And I immediately knew exactly what it was then. I said, Enzo just got exposed. So what happened was, this dumbass got on top of his chair, he took the hoodie off, revealed himself, and did his whole opening spiel that he used to do on television, standing on his chair to the fans. And some of the fans were into it, a lot of fans were not, because they don't like Enzo. So security comes down, and they Enzo kind of falls, and when he falls right in security. And what's funny is, like, the main security guard that took him out was the woman that almost stopped Gronk from hopping the rail at WrestleMania in Orlando last year, which that was hilarious. She was the one here. So that's tremendous. So anyway, the crowd's all up in the air about that. So these guys had no chance from the start. it's dueling chance. We want Enzo. No, we don't. That was going on. And finally, everybody settled down. The match is going on. All right, so now they're starting to build towards a finish. Big Show knocks down poor Drake Maverick, then lifts him up on the apron, and he's goozling him. And now I'm watching what's going on here, and I'm thinking, okay, Drake looks like he got something in his mouth. Are they going to do the deal where he's, you know, going to bleed out of the mouth or do some stupid shit? Oh, no. Oh, no. They had Drake piss his pants. Yes. They had him piss his pants. And it wasn't a lot, but it was a trickle of water. And Cesaro and Sheamus were disgusted by this, and AOP used this as an opportunity to get the win. But...
Oh, man.
I mean, if you... Here's... Here's the signs that Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn were running the ship here. Mandy Rose was getting significant amount of airtime, and we got humor like this: Drake Maverick pissing his pants. So there you go. But this is gonna be something that's gonna be remembered for a long time for poor Drake. And the guy, and here's the thing: the guy's been great. I mean, he's great on 205 Live. He's done a good job in the role he's done with AOP, just, you know, being there at ringside. It's like, why? Why? This was so fucking unnecessary. So I can't wait to hear your thoughts on everything that happened. Enzo, this bullshit. I mean, what you got?
This match, I don't think, was very good for a lot of, because of the distractions. There was although there was that one spot where Cesaro was doing the swing and the other AOP guy jumped over the guy getting swung and knocked. Yes. And that was an incredibly dangerous spot that could have gone very badly.
AOP has both those guys are freaky athletes. Like I said, once they catch up to that, and you know, as far as in ring, there's no telling what they can do.
Oh yeah, absolutely. The match wasn't awful, but it was definitely hurt by a lot of distractions and the fact that I think the wrestlers knew that there was a lot of other stuff going on, so they just kind of went through the motions. But the Enzo stuff is just hilariously stupid. The security woman looked like she's about to beat his ass, which is pretty funny. and I hope she did. But that was just. That wig or hairpiece he was wearing was looked like what's his name, Mo from the Three Stooges,
Shemp.
Is it Mo? Yeah. Whichever one has the ridiculous haircut.
Well, Mo has the bowl haircut.
Yes, yes, Mo. Yes.
Yeah.
Then I was right. Yes. So that was definitely an interesting side plot. To what was going on outside of the match. As far as the finish goes, the funniest part about that finish, other than the fact that it was stupid, was the fact that it was they didn't even do a good job of him pissing his pants. It looked like when you go to the urinal, yes, and you don't shake it, you know, and you get like one trickle down on your pants. Like,
well, say a trickle, yeah.
I mean, that's literally what it looked like. I mean, it didn't even look like he pissed his pants, really. So that was even poorly done. But I mean, it was a stupid finish. It was bad for sure. I think for me, one of the worst parts was that, I mean, you got this guy who's putting over the cruiserweight division, cutting this great promo in the pre-show, and these fans who don't watch 205 Live every week are going to see this guy piss his pants. How can you take that show seriously? You know, when the voice of 205 Live pissing his pants. So I mean, that was just stupid. But this was definitely an interesting match, and a lot of the interesting things really had nothing to do with it, except for I guess the finish did. But yeah, this was definitely a match that was not highlighted much on the bar and AOP. Hopefully they get another encounter down the line. I think those guys can do some great things together. But yeah, this match just wasn't it. There was too much other stuff going on for this match to stand out at all, I think.
Yeah, maybe they'll get a redo one of these days. Who knows? All right, so you mentioned 205 Live. So how do you follow the guy that runs 205 Live pissing his pants? You had those Cruiserweight Championship match from 205 Live. Naturally. Yes. Well, Buddy Murphy defending the Cruiserweight Championship against Mustafa Ali. Now, this was a match I was definitely looking forward to. I love 205 Live. Watch it every week. The best week-to-week television show that WWE has, in my opinion. Delivers every week, just about. And I knew what these guys could do. A lot of the fans didn't, because they didn't give a shit. They did not give a shit. And just reading people there that were live, they were like, chants of, who are these guys? You know, and all this other stuff. So they had a chore ahead of them to try and win this crowd over. Well, guess what? They did it.
Yep.
They did it. And Mustafa Ali is a complete insane madman. He takes bumps that no normal person would take. And he takes them, and then he's just right back up again. I mean, that the bump off the top until the barricade was rough. The bump off the top where he hits his face on the apron and falls to the floor. I thought, oh my God. Oh my God. And then he just bounced right back up. You know, and then the Spanish fly off the in the house table into the mat. I mean, so many great spots this match. Crowd even started chanting 205. And you know, this is awesome. And oh, it was just an amazing match. Murphy has become one of the best workers around, and it's amazing the transformation he's undergone this year, from being just a complete nobody to being the butt of the jokes about Alexa Bliss and Braun Strowman and stuff like that. But the guy's coming to his own and has become a hell of a damn wrestler. And yeah, this was tremendous stuff, and Murphy retained the title. So at this point, this was the best match on the show. So what were your thoughts?
This was excellent. I was so happy to see this because I knew, to me, and I think you'll agree with me, Chris. I knew if these guys could get on the main show right in the middle of this show with a crowd like that and have time, and they did, they'd get over, and they did. You know, they had a great match and they got over, and they had the best match on the card up to that point. It wasn't even close. You know, they had, and really, in a lot of ways, If you've watched the series, and I know Chris, you have, you know, Ali and Murphy have had a long series this year. They had a long feud back in the spring and into the summer. This was really just the greatest highlights of that feud, but it was still a great match. It wasn't even the best of their matches, but it was really just a best of hits match. But you know, from their previous rivalry, but it was an excellent match. It was done to put 205 Live over, I think, and I think it was successful. Like you said, Ali is a complete madman. To me, the scariest bump he took was that first one when he gets pushed off and goes back first, shoulder first into the barricade. That's just frightening. As JR used to say, he said there's no safe way to fall off a ladder, but There's no safe way to get pushed off, you know, 10, 15 feet down on your... I mean, that guy's just a lunatic. I mean, that... Yeah, this match was excellent. Buddy Murphy's awesome. And I'm very confident in saying that, you know, for those who haven't seen these guys wrestle week to week, trust me when I say this, because WWE overall hasn't been that amazing in ring this year. Certainly not at all, really. But Buddy Murphy and Mustafa Ali are the best two in-ring wrestlers in 2018 WWE. This year, in my opinion, they're the absolute best when it comes to bell to bell. And these guys delivered tonight, and I was happy to see that. And I don't think it's going to happen. And I think it's a pipe dream, and it's a bit of a fantasy dream in booking. But I really hope that tonight's match convinced Vince and Kevin Dunn or whoever to put the Cruiserweight title match back on the main show every month on the pay-per-views and put it onto the card. You know, even if you get it, I mean, even if it's just on the pre-show, I mean, they've had, you know, one or two matches on the pre-show that have gotten over, but hopefully they can get these matches onto the main card sometimes again, and not just the big four shows. And because these guys deserve it, and the crowd ate it up and enjoyed it. So that's my hope, is in the future, you know, even for TLC coming up next month, hopefully we'll get it, you know, we get a Buddy Murphy title defense on that show. Because I think that they proved that they can get over with the main audience. That was the number one thing that came out of that, is that they showed that, you know, because people have always said, well, you know, these guys, they come out and nobody cares about them. And, you know, back in 2016, 2017, they did have matches where nobody cared about them on the main shows because it was a different show. But now that the show that they have, you know, you put these guys on these main shows, these main roster shows, they're going to excel and they're going to get over. So this was a very pleasing match. For me, definitely.
The one thing they gotta do is they desperately do have to get some more people up.
Yeah.
I mean, I know Mike Bennett, mm-hmm. Mike Kanellis is on there now, and they're going to do something with him, but they got to get some more names on there and mix these matches up, because, I mean, a lot of these guys have been on that show, and like you said, for the 2 years now, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
And they're still working each other. They got to get some new people on that show. Got to. So, who knows? Maybe somebody like Johnny Gargano. I mean, he would excel on that show. We need to get some new blood on there. We've been preaching that for a while, so maybe they'll do something. All right, yeah, hell of a match. Highly recommend it. Caleb Braxton gets Daniel Bryan backstage. And he has nothing to say. Now, as this was going on, Twitter was reporting that Enzo had been kicked out of the building, of course, and he had been tweeting and such like that. So it came out during the show that Staples Center has supposedly banned him from all future events in the building. So there you go.
Good.
There was your Enzo up there. All right, next we get the Men's Survivor Series match. Team Raw, featuring Braun Strowman. We had Dolph Ziggler. We had Drew McIntyre. We had Bobby Lashley. We had Finn Balor. Did I mention it's your body? Yes, yep. Finn Balor. Yes. And then SmackDown, we had Shane McMahon. We had Jeff Hardy. We had Rey Mysterio, The Miz, and Samoa Joe. Samoa Joe was very over. Los Angeles guy, crowd was into him. So actually, he gets put out in 30 seconds by Drew McIntyre, which, hey, Drew McIntyre is getting the mega push. But Joe may have been the wrong guy to do that to at the beginning, I think. We'll get your thoughts on that in a minute. So maybe it should have been somebody else. I don't know. But it was what it was. But, you know, the stories of this match was what was going on with Baron Corbin, because that Raw needed to win. He's outside as team captain, cheerleading him on. And Shane McMahon. Of course, Shane McMahon won the best in the world at the Crown Jewel show. in interesting circumstances. And now here he is here. The story is that he stole that and he's going to try to steal this. Miz, who he replaced at Crown Jewel, was really pumping Shane up full of sunshine. And during the match, he was tagging Shane in after Shane had gone through some shit, because Shane did Shane stuff. Shane did the big elbow through the table, put Braun Strowman out, where Braun just laid there for about 15 minutes. And then he did the Van Terminator. And he hit the Van Terminator and on Ziggler the first time. So he's blown the death on that one. So Miz gets back in, does his thing. Then Miz tags him in again. Shane's about to have a heart attack. So Shane goes up for another one. And here comes Braun out of nowhere, just clubs him in midair and puts him down. And just hilarious. Hilarious how Shane McMahon also, and Jeff Hardy too. But Shane McMahon and Jeff Hardy, the two guys who weren't obligated to wear shirts. They had their gear on, but this match, it was a hell of a match. It really was. Lots of great stuff going on. Definitely made you want to see Balor against Rey. Definitely made you want to see Drew against Rey. Definitely made you see Rey against Braun.
Right.
There's a lot going on there. The story, Raw guys are beating up on each other more than anything else too. That was a situation, but they got rid of the SmackDown guys. Braun got rid of Hardy, Ray, and Miz himself, and then Shane. So Braun eliminated four guys by himself to win the match. And while Drew and Bobby Lashley hung on the apron, and then they attacked Braun after the match with Corbin. So we got all that going on coming up, but because Stephanie promised that Braun could have Corbin, which I think is going to play into the whole Corbin deal, because if you remember, I said Stephanie told Corbin that he would have a better chance of becoming Raw general manager if they swept the show. Well, not to go too far in spoiling what happens the rest of the show. They swept the show. So what I think is going to happen is, Corbin's going to be named the official general manager, and then Braun's going to beat the holy hell out of him, and Corbin's going to have to take a time off, and then Kurt Angle's going to come back, be the acting general manager.
Oh, I love it.
We're going to get it all over again. So what's your thoughts on the match and everything else going on here with Corbin, Strowman, and all that shit?
I loved this. I absolutely loved this match. It was extremely entertaining.
Absolutely.
I really, really, really enjoyed this. I could see, if you don't follow it week to week, or you're not into the characters or the storylines, I could actually see people not liking it at all. I really can. But for my money, I loved this a lot. Like, this was very entertaining. I was going crazy, just enjoying myself to the fullest. To start, McIntyre needed to eliminate somebody, and I think Joe was a good choice for him. McIntyre eliminating Ray and Jeff Hardy, I get that they're legends, but like, you know what I mean? Like, he's a big dude. It would make sense for him to take those guys out. Shane, he already destroyed Kurt Angle, so Shane and Angle are kind of the same thing to me in terms of, like, you know what I mean? Like, in terms of, like, beating up, like, the old, like, Clint Eastwood, authority figure. I'm laughing at myself for comparing Shane to Clint Eastwood, but
Well, he's beating up the guys that he's beating up the guys that stole the show King of the Ring 2001.
There you go. Yes. There you go. Yes. Great, 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 great shout out there. Yeah,
17 years ago.
Yeah. God almighty.
I know.
And Joe, yeah, he was very over and the fans weren't pleased with that, but Joe is the new gatekeeper. He's the new Mark Henry. That is literally his role now. If you pay attention to the booking, that is his role. They had to legitimize him with a Lesnar feud. If you noticed in the Lesnar feud last summer, he got everything over on Brock until, you know, basically, you know, he basically dominated Brock in the match, you know, until basically the F5 ended it. But so that was, you know, that established Joe. And now, you know, that was basically, that feud was done to establish Joe as the gatekeeper of the company. That's sort of what I'm convinced as. As far as Joe.
And Joe might be, and Joe might be the guy that Lars, you know.
There you go. Yep. Good shout out there too. You know, I think that's a possibility. So I think Joe was the perfect guy for Drew McIntyre to eliminate, actually. And doing it early, I can see that being questionable. But you know, I really thought it was a good booking decision. When Shane and Dolph got in there, and literally, Chris, they were shooting on each other. Like, that's not a joke. Shane literally gave Dolph a shoot punch, and Dolph got pissed and drop-hipped him in the face. That's literally what happened.
Yes, he like did.
That's literally what happened. Then Shane shoot-elbowed him in the face later. Like, that, like, I was literally screaming and yelling and going nuts. Like, it was hilarious and awesome at the same time. Like,
I really think that Dolph took that shit seriously about, you know, doing the job for Shane at Crown Jewel.
He might have.
I think he really was pissed off. I think he was really pissed off about how that played out.
I mean, he clocked Shane with that drop kick early. My God, he clocked him. That's okay, because Shane knows how to give receipts, and he clocked him later again with an elbow. So, I mean, that was amazing. You know, then the match totally broke down. I was totally into the Raw infighting because it all made sense. You know, from the weeks leading up to the, you know, to the match. Ray was excellent in this match. He's been excellent since he's came back. But, you know, the...
That's right.
Yeah, I mean,
that's,
it's Ray, right. You know, like you said. He's, you know, always a good guy to have in Survivor Series tags. One of the more underrated Survivor Series tag workers ever, actually. I mean, you know, a lot of people love Ray, but you never really talk about how good he is in Survivor Series tags. But he's been in a lot of good ones and been great in all of them. And he was great tonight. The Finn Balor sequence was great. The Braun sequence where he was eliminated was great. Miz was amazing in this. Like, clearly using Shane as like a shield and as someone to try to take everybody out for like, Miz was amazing in his character. Yes. Work, like, totally being like a troll, like, come on, Shane, do another coast to coast, you can do it. Like, I mean,
oh yeah.
And then Braun taking Shane's head off, of course them taking Braun out early with the big elbow to the table was great. I mean, I enjoyed this match a ton. I do think it kind of ended on a thud at the end, although I think you have to build Braun up for the Brock rematch and, you know, down the line, which is, I think, what they did more than anything. But I do think it kind of ended on a thud a little bit. But at the same time, like, I kind of wanted Shane to get, like, a victory or two before Braun finally took him out. But, you know, you got to protect McIntyre, and they've done a pretty good job of protecting Lashley lately. So, you know, I think you do have to protect those guys. And I'm more about protecting wrestlers like that than Shane McMahon, even though I am a Shane Mark. So... I was fine with the finish ultimately, although I do think momentum kind of got, you know, the wind kind of got knocked out of the sails there a little bit, you know, for the finish, because I still think the fans were pretty into babyface underdog Shane, even though that's pretty amusing. But Shane's just a guilty pleasure of mine, so I really enjoyed him in this match. I really, really, really enjoyed this. As far as the Braun Corbin stuff, I'm sure they'll have a match at TLC next month. And I mean, you know, Braun says he mentioned he wants a stipulation. So obviously there's going to be a stipulation to that match. So, you know, I'm sure we'll find that out tomorrow or within the next week or so. But, as far as, you know, I don't think we're done with Kurt Angle.
No.
But I do think it was interesting how decisive McIntyre beat him in the match. Maybe that was a way for Kurt Angle to not wrestle for a while. Although I think Kurt has looked in better shape this year than he did in 2017. Honestly, in terms of in-ring shape.
Yeah.
He definitely
has shown better.
I thought that was interesting. I would never believe that because it's WWE and they love nostalgia acts, especially in terms of in-ring and matches. But maybe that was I don't really believe it, but maybe that's just a way for Kurt to stop wrestling altogether and just be back in the management role that he was in before. I mean, I don't know. That might seem, you know, that definitely might seem like a misread, but I guess, like I said, I don't think they're done with Kurt. And I feel like they still need to do a Kurt Angle Baron Corbin match, though. So maybe not. Like it's a weird situation. You know, Braun and Corbin is definitely going to be settled at TLC, I think. But I do think Kurt Angle is going to come back into the picture, and I feel like they got to do an Angle Corbin match. Maybe they'll do like Angle versus Corbin at WrestleMania or something. I don't know, but there's definitely something to that, and with it being the stipulation, I mean, obviously it's TLC, so you got to think their first guess would be something to do with tables, ladders, and chairs or stairs. Laugh out loud. But
indeed.
I think there's a chance although Braun. There's a stipulation with Kurt Angle involved or something. So, we'll see. Maybe Kurt's a special guest referee or something. I don't know. But that's definitely something to think about down the line, because that's definitely where Braun's headed as a stopgap to the Brock rematch. So Braun Corbin coming up, maybe with Kurt Angle involvement.
Yeah, maybe. And Drew's definitely got the rocket on him.
Oh, yes.
They're definitely going to do something with him. Who knows? Maybe he'll be the one to beat Brock. Who knows? Somebody's going to do it.
Yep.
So, I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, yeah, strong match. All right. Then Seth's interviewed by Charlie Caruso. And she tells him that he will be having Dean Ambrose at TLC. So, that's got to be the TLC match. I got a thing. Would you think that's going to be the full shebang?
I would think so. They've never had a one-on-one TLC. They've had the 2014, they had the Lumberjack, the False Count Anywhere, and the Hell in Cell. And they had the straight-up ladder match in 2015. But they've never had the TLC. I think you might be right on that, Chris. I think that's what we might get there is the TLC with Dean and Seth for the IC belt for sure. I think there's a good possibility of that.
Yeah, it makes sense. All right, next we have the last two matches. Champion versus champion replacement. Ronda Rousey versus Charlotte Flair. Of course, Becky Lynch supposed to be in the match. And her broken face prevented her from that. So she had picked Charlotte to take her spot in the weird little deal on SmackDown where she hugged Charlotte after their feud of hatred for the past couple of months. But it was what it was. And the crowd was very interesting here. The crowd was extremely pro-Becky, so they were cheering Charlotte. And Ronda comes out, and it's Los Angeles. Ronda Rousey, you think, man, she should be getting the mega pop. No, she had heat. Mm-hmm. They were booing her. And a lot of people that was in the building were talking about how loud the boos were for her. But if you watched it on television, you didn't know that was that loud. I mean, you heard them, but you didn't know it was that loud. So it come off as somebody was playing around on the production side of things. They were missing some sound there or whatever, but we get the match. Ronda's wearing a different type of look. She's got red gear with like claw marks or whatever, like the Davy Richards old shit that you know Davy Richards would have on, like the wolf was clawing through her tights, and she had that hideous face that makeup around the eyes again. She likes that, so whatever. Anyway, this match was wild. I mean, again, like I said earlier, I said the women, you know, in Survivor Series, women had their own way of doing things, pretty much. They come out there and they just beat the shit out of each other. I mean, you watch this match of times and you're wondering, and you think to yourself, like, do these people, do they know this is a work? Because you see them, and they're just like, just laying these shots in. Charlotte busts Ronda open in the mouth with an elbow, you know, on the mat, and then, I mean, it's just crazy. And they're doing all, you know, all kinds of shit. Ronda, it's so interesting watching Ronda matches. I mean, every reaction show we've done that she's been a part of, you know, we've both been just like blown away at how good she is for her short period of time. And this is another one of those moments, man. She was amazing in this match. And Charlotte fed off of everything. And this is like the most inspired Charlotte's been in a long time. I mean, she definitely brought her A game tonight too. And you could tell where their position is that Ronda's the babyface and Charlotte's the heel in this match. Just like they think Becky's the heel. So that's the way they positioned all this stuff, but the fans don't give a fuck about their position.
No.
They were going ape shit for Charlotte. So then we had the finish where Ronda, you know, almost has Charlotte. And Charlotte gets out of the ring and she gets the kendo stick. And she just starts beating the shit out of Ronda. And they call for the DQ. So we got a DQ finish, which, you know, it works because you didn't have DQ finishes in any of the matches before it.
Right.
You know, see what happens when you protect the finish? When you protect a screwjob finish instead of running it just about every fucking match, like some wrestling promoters have done in the past and still do. So Charlotte just starts laying the shots in on her. This was crazy. The crowd was just volcanic for this shit. Chanting for Charlotte. Thank you, Charlotte. And all this other stuff. They did a deal where Charlotte was beating up the referees. She put the chair around Ronda's head and neck and then did a stomp on it while they were chanting, thank you, Charlotte. The fan, and here's the thing, though. They were doing this big deal for Ronda. They really had the fans feel sorry for her, have sympathy for her, but it didn't work. It was the exact opposite. And they were chanting, you deserve it, and all this other stuff, and some people think that Ronda was legitimately upset by all this, and she may have been. I don't know. But the thing is, they did the chair around the neck. Charlotte does the deal where she, you know, she drops a knee on, if I'm mistaken, and it's supposed to have a serious injury. And the referees and doctors are checking on Ronda, such and such, and she eventually walks out on her own power. Which I thought was interesting. Normally, you at least have somebody help the person out. But they let her walk on her own power. And your brother Dylan mentioned on Twitter that he thought that worked with Ronda more than it worked anybody else, basically, because of how they push her. But I don't know. I mean, I still think they should have had some type of deal where she's showing something, you know, she's having to be helped at least by, you know, put their arms around or whatever. And yeah, and when she got to the stage and the crowd was just really in on her, you could tell that she kind of was disappointed, maybe, all that sort of stuff. So now we're here at this situation. All right, this is an obvious feud that we have built in because Ronda has her horsewomen with Shayna Baszler, Jessamyn Duke, Marina Shafir, and Charlotte, Becky, Sasha Bailey on that side. So you have a ready-made angle here now. It's still too early for Jessamine and Marina and even Shayna to be part of the show. But if you do this angle, you got to switch it here. I mean, I think you got to switch Ronda heel, and because the fans are healing her, and so that's the problem that I was mentioning earlier. You got the deal where you got these two mega babyface now on SmackDown and Charlotte and Becky, even though they're supposed to be heels. And you got these two mega heels now on Raw, where one's supposed to be babyface and Ronda. And you got Nia, who is, you know, a heel. There's no heat on, I mean, the heat is on separate shows. And Raw, at least Raw has women that are defined on both sides. SmackDown's heel side is pretty much non-existent, except for, you know, Peyton and Billy, because Lana is now a babyface, Naomi's babyface, Charlotte and Becky have no chance but being babyfaces, Carmella's babyface, Asuka's babyface, so it's like, they're going to have to do something here, somebody's going to switch. Or it's just going to be, I mean, what do you do? I mean, how do you maintain it with these women, man? Because, and Ronda and Nia is coming up, and that has the potential. You know, everybody talks about, you know, Lesnar Goldberg or WrestleMania, how the crowd would shit on a match. The crowd could really shit on this one. If they're going to start getting on Ronda and being against her, which who knows, it could have been just the way it was. But if they take that attitude in that match where they're both just booing both women, that could be a bad scene. So, what's your thoughts on all this and where we're going in the match and everything?
The match was tremendous. Absolutely great. They absolutely tore into each other. The best Charlotte Flair performance. Charlotte was very good at Evolution, to be fair. But I thought she was even better tonight. She was just absolutely amazing. Best she's looked since probably the Sasha feud in 2016. She was just amazing tonight. They were like in a legitimate fight felt. The busted open, you know, the elbow to the mouth was nasty. She did that forearm right out of the gate. That was just brutal. Like that was a full on forearm that I actually think bruised up Ronda's eye a little bit. If you notice, like right out of the gate. I think Ronda told her to lay it in, probably, because you know I'm pretty sure they practice these matches, and I bet Ronda just told her to friggin' lay it in, man, because Charlotte was just beating the living crap out of her, and it was awesome, you know, and Ronda was playing it smart, just trying to work that arm and work that arm and work that arm, and Charlotte was tremendous, desperately trying to get out of that, and. There were so many great spots in this. I mean, the spot where Ronda made her first big comeback and then Charlotte just speared her to hell. And then there was the part where Ronda started to throw her strikes and Charlotte blocked them all and then just completely lit up Ronda's chest. I mean, Ronda's chest was purple. I mean, Charlotte was just lighting her chest up with chops. And then they did the great figure four spot. And I thought they did a great job with Ronda desperately fighting out of the figure eight and turning it over. Like, this was a complete total fight. They had desperation. Like, this was an absolutely tremendous match. Just absolutely tremendous. Like, I would definitely want to see a rematch between these two for sure. Great, great, great match. The post-match, the finish was great. I think it was smart. The finish was the post match was. I didn't expect to see that. I was a little, and it was pretty intense stuff. I mean, just Charlotte was just beating the living daylights out of Ronda with the kendo stick. The the chair knee spot. I mean, the crowd going crazy for Charlotte and doing all those chants and Ronda's like Ronda's. You know, she seemed really dejected, up there on the stage. As far as her walking out, I'm actually with Dylan here. I think because it's Ronda, I can get that. And I think she played the emotion right. And I think because she had so many visible scars and bruises on her body, you know what I mean? That I think the visual was enough to show that she got her fucking ass beat. Like, I mean, I sympathize and understand your point, and I think it would have been perfectly fine to have people help her out too. But at the same time, Ronda coming out and walking out, you know, I'm perfectly fine with, because it is Ronda. They're in a really interesting situation right now, because Charlotte's back to being probably going to be pretty over again. You know, she's got a lot of momentum now. Becky's got a ton of momentum. They've really got to keep Becky on TV. You know, she's still got the belt. You know, if I were them, I'd just have her show up and cut promos and be a badass. And you know what I mean? Like, basically book her like Austin in 97. You've got Nia, who's got the molten heat from the now, you know, controversial, infamous punch. You know, you've got Ronda, who's basically bulletproof in terms of how she's booked. You've got these four big stars, but they're all on separate shows. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle this stuff. Ronda and Nia is now in the foreground. That's coming up next month at TLC. I'm going to be interested to see if they put a stipulation on that match. I'll be interested to see if they make it a chairs match or a ladder match or something.
Well, the thing is that how are they going to handle these injuries? Because, I mean, are they going to use this to be the way that Ronda loses the title?
That's a very good point. I've seen,
but the title on Nia.
Yeah, I saw some people bring that up. You know, that's a very good point. I think that there's, you know, there's a lot of things that you can sort of draw from this angle tonight, that this was a setup for a Ronda Charlotte rematch at WrestleMania, and that Nia is going to win the belt on Raw because of this, and that Becky's going to chase Nia and beat her at WrestleMania, and or at least wrestle her at WrestleMania, and then, you know, Charlotte's somehow going to get, you know, yeah, I guess a SmackDown belt, and Ronda's gonna, or something, I don't know, you know, or
we could have a multi,
right? Exactly. There could be a multi woman match as well. That's very possible. Because you have to remember that, you know, there's still the tie-in with Becky and Charlotte. So, you know, there's, you know, and Ronda and Nia, of course, and now Nia and Becky have a tie-in. So it could be even as much as a four-way, you know, I mean, that's not out of the realm of possibility with how WWE books WrestleMania matches and multi-mans on that show. So, you know, this is, you know, I'll give them the credit in the sense that they've got four female wrestlers who are very, who've got a lot of momentum going right now. You brought up the four horsewomen versus four horsewomen deal. Now, this is possibly a coincidence and probably even one, but if you pay attention going back to the women's tag match, Bayley and Sasha were protected in that match. They were protected, both of them were. If you noticed, Bayley was the one who hit Sonya with the belly to belly, you know, and she just got counted out. That's, you know, she was protected. Sasha looked like she might have been able to get rid of Asuka. She got pushed off the apron. She was protected. They protected, you know, and Becky, I think, was being pushed and put over so much, even with the injury this past week. All four NXT horsewomen were protected this week and tonight. And that is possibly a coincidence, but I think that that's something worth keeping an eye on. And, you know, Marina and Jessamine are definitely going to be, you know, consistent presences on NXT TV going forward. You know,
because it looks like we're going to have a six woman match
with
TakeOver, yep, with Kairi and Io and
Dakota Kai.
Dakota,
yep,
Kai.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, that's something to keep an eye on. I think that's always kind of been the fantasy booking kind of pipe dream deal.
Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's just a question of when.
I think you're right. You know, Dave Meltzer, you know, we joke on Dave. He's always saying it's going to happen next month. You know, how Dave is, but, yeah. yeah, you know, I think that's something worth keeping an eye out on. I think we'll have to hold out on Shayna and the other girls coming up until probably after WrestleMania. I mean, I would think,
they could be part of the women's Rumble.
They could be that's a strong possibility. I mean, that's a pretty big show, you know. Rumble is every year, but in that environment, in that arena, they're going to try to make something big happen there. So, you know, that's something to keep it, you know, to keep in mind. I mean, there's a lot of directions that could go with this, you know. This, you know, some people think it was just Bayley basically hired Charlotte as a hitman, and Charlotte's been frustrated because she's not the champion, so she just took out her anger and beat the hell out of Ronda as like a hitman kind of deal, you know. I mean, there's a lot of ways they could go with this. Really, in the end, Chris, I think that this kind of shows that the women's division is the hottest part of the WWE product right now.
It pretty much has been, though.
Pretty much. You know, it's the best thing going right now, at least on the main roster. I mean, I don't know how you feel, but it's really.
I agree.
It's, you know, and they've done a pretty good job, you know, at least with these four ladies the last couple of weeks, you know, Charlotte, Nia, even before the punch, Nia was getting protected, you know, winning the Battle Royal at 11, you know, at Evolution, and Becky and Ronda. So, I mean, there's a lot of options and scenarios that could happen, and I'm just going to let it play out, but I'm definitely excited and interested to see where they go with it all.
Oh yeah. So a lot of interesting things ahead in the women's division on both shows, no doubt. All right, then we have our main event. Champion versus champion, Universal Champion Brock Lesnar against WWE World Champion Daniel Bryan, yes, who beat AJ Styles on SmackDown Tuesday. So no AJ on this show at all. I kind of thought maybe he would get involved in this match, but nope, he wasn't on the show. So Brian is a heel. He even his intro where they're supposed to do the yes chants, he starts to do it and then stops. And the crowd was reacting to him as a heel mainly during his entrance. So they know the deal. But Brock Lesnar is going to be a heel no matter what. I mean, that's just Brock. So Daniel's basically a babyface this match. Now, I was watching people on Twitter. I don't think a lot of people just seem to forget how a lot of the Brock Lesnar matches go. And because Brock came out after Brian played this cat and mouse game with him, which lasted a little bit. It was pretty funny. Still trying to keep away. But Brock finally got it. And boy, did he drop him on the first German suplex. Well, obviously, Brian was fine. But man, that looked rough. And he just kept on pounding him. And this is a tip that we've seen before, where Brock would just beat the hell out of dudes for a little bit, and then finally make their comeback. And that's what we got here. I was waiting on saying anything on Twitter, because I had a feeling what was going to happen. I knew that they were not going to have Brock steamroll Bryan, especially not after he just won the belt, and they're doing this thing with him. I just knew that this wasn't going to happen like that. Well, Bryan made his big comeback, and boy, did he. He took it to Brock. He gave him everything he had. And the crowd was into him again. And it just, you know, it seemed like he was going to make Brock tap out. Well, it never happened. Brock eventually got this big time F5 on him and put him down. He got the 1-2-3. And that was it. And then, the main thing they were showing on Brian after the match was he was getting back up to his feet and he was smiling. And for various reasons, I mean, you could definitely tell that Brian was loving this, because Brian has talked about working Brock Lesnar for years. So he finally got his match. I'm sure he was very happy, but it plays into his little smug gimmick he's got going on now too. And he did his nut shot in this match as well, like he did to AJ to win the belt. But But yeah, I mean, considering what the deal was, I mean, they're not, Brock was not going to job, folks. I mean, if you thought that, then you're wrong, because they're just not going to job him. So there had to be some type of interesting finish, and the finish that we got was, so Brock goes out on top. Brian's basically almost laughing in the show. So, what's your thoughts on how this turned out?
The match was tremendous. An awesome match. It was worked very similar to the AJ match last year. But the difference is, you know, AJ was sort of using his high flying based offense and stuff like that. He was attacking Brock like some of that match, but Brian was a little bit more violent on his offense. Although, you know, he was using the high flying tactics. The early stuff with Brian mocking Brock's dancing and stuff was funny, and the first German was horrifying and really uncomfortable to watch, actually. You know, and then the whole deal where it was clearly done on purpose, where Brock yelled out Suplex City to get a Suplex City chant going, and the fans standing, same old shit. It was done as a way because they know the fans were going to react that way, so they did that on purpose to set up the Brian comeback, which was well done. And you know, if Brian wasn't going to win on the low blow, he wasn't going to win at all. So when I saw that, I admittedly bit on the low blow near fall. But once that happened, I said, okay, now I'm just waiting for the next F5. And what kept me in the match is when I kept thinking Brock was going to hit the F5, Brian would counter it and do something else. And so, you know, that was really well done. You know, they built to the second F5 really, really well. The most satisfying image and moment as someone who has pure hatred for Brock Lesnar was when Daniel Bryan curb stomped Brock in the face full force and left his footprint on his face. That was as a petty angry fan, that was satisfying to see, although absolutely brutal. Because literally Daniel Bryan's footprint was on Brock Lesnar's face for the rest of the match. but Brock let Brian lay it in, big time. And I bet Brock was hurting from that a little bit, honestly. That curb stomp was pretty brutal. Brock collapsing under one of those F5 attempts and Brian putting in the guest lock, that was all extremely well done. Brock teasing tap out was well done. I mean, it was a great, great match. It was obvious in the post-match and on commentary throughout the match and after the match that the idea was that, like, this match wasn't about Brock Lesnar. It was about Daniel Bryan and the way he changed. I think it worked to a degree, but at the same time, I don't think it worked as well as they thought it would because he didn't win the match. Now, look, Brock wasn't going to lose, you're right. But if you want that Daniel Bryan character change to really work, you got to have him win the match to me, full on. You know, like, and I don't think... And I think at the end, fans are just more like, well, he lost, so who cares? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, even though we all know Brock's going to win, it's still like, you know, in the moment, you know, you think Brian might have a chance or you get really behind Brian and then he just doesn't win. And, like, you could tell, like, even Brock and Heyman were doing the whole deal where they were, like, kind of, like, nodding their head in approval or, like, kind of like laughing. I'm like, man, this Brian guy is kind of crazy. You know what I mean? Like, but so they were definitely trying to do that. And I think in theory it works, but I don't think it really works in execution if Brian doesn't win the match. You know, I mean, hell, you could have Brian just, you know, make a comeback and then low blow Brock later and then Brock wins by DQ. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I just, in terms of getting this new Daniel Bryan character change over fully, I think that they did get it over to a degree. Don't get me wrong. But in terms of being able to get it over fully, I don't think that they accomplished that because at the end of the day, you know, Brock's not going to lie down. So to me, I really don't think it was the right time to do this. You know, I don't think it was the right time to do this at all. I think I read somewhere that I think it might have been like a cage side seat room roundup or something that, you know, Brian was they were planning on Brian winning the belt on Tuesday all along because Vince didn't want AJ to lose the belt 2 years or lose twice in a row. But they moved the heel turn up to just create intrigue for the show. And that the heel turn wasn't supposed to happen until later. So maybe it was supposed to happen at TLC, and then you know what I mean? And then they just moved the heel turn up to try to create intrigue after the Becky injury. And I think it would have worked more if Brian was a babyface and was sort of laughing as like a setup for the later heel turn. But I think they just sort of panicked after the Becky injury and or, you know, possibly moved the heel turn up, at least from a rumor. I mean, rumors are rumors. And then I don't really think it worked out that way. I mean, that's really my main criticism of the match. I'm not even that mad that Brock won. I mean, I'm never happy that Brock wins, but I was just glad to see a great match. But, you know, all in all, I think the match was great. And I'm looking forward to Brian as a smug heel. I think he's a terrific heel. But, you know, I just thought it was kind of looking at all the booking in terms of trying to get the Brian, the new Brian character over. I just don't think it was really the right time to do that. It was, you know, with Bulletproof, I don't want to lie down Brock. It's kind of hard to do stuff like that. I don't know. But otherwise, it was a great match. Still there?
Yeah, I'm here. Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's just an interesting situation, you know? It's definitely interesting to see where we go from here. All right, so what are your thoughts on the show altogether? Thumbs up, thumbs down, thumbs in the middle?
I'd say thumbs up. You know, I think it was not a high thumbs up, but right at about where, you know, the thumb turns up. I thought the first half was kind of a stinker, but, you know, in some ways. But, yeah, the second half of the show was really good. Several great matches, big angles, some strong character development, and things to look forward to going forward. And I think that's a success, so I'm going to give it a thumbs up.
Yeah, for a show that basically, in many ways, is like thrown together like duct tape. Well, I mean, with duct tape, that made it work. And it was definitely one of the most entertaining pay-per-views I've had this year. And coming off Evolution, which was in its own right, an amazing show, and probably the best main pay-per-view they've done, I mean, for this year. I mean, having this happen, you know, right after, that's very good. TLC is going to be what it is, you know, with the gimmicks. But it's encouraging, especially, you know, with television, you know, sometimes not always being the best and recently. But, you know, we got to take consideration, too. I mean, we're not far away from Mania season, so we could have an early start to Mania season. You know, with this stuff going on, we could start building up to what's going to happen at the Royal Rumble and so forth and so forth. So,
oh, yes. You know, they'll...
They got a lot of...
Go ahead. They'll have the build of TLC, and then, you know, there's definitely going to be some stuff that I think they're already teasing stuff for WrestleMania now.
Yeah.
You know, they'll have their holiday week, you know, like they always do in USA, you know, after TLC, and that'll be sort of, you know what I mean? They'll have a few big matches for that, but it'll be sort of a relaxing week. And then after that, they're going to go full on, you know, Rumble build. So, I mean, we're close.
Yeah. So, interesting times ahead for WWE. All right, that's it for us. We will be back with TLC in another month. So, for Chris and for Devin, we'd like to thank you for listening and come back. So, thanks, and we are out of here.